Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest today is Dr. Jane Dameron, senior lecturer in Baylor's Department of Communication. Dr. Dameron was awarded the Collins Outstanding Professor Award for 2019. It's an award that recognizes and honors outstanding professors each year after being voted on by the senior class. After receiving the award, Dameron presented the lecture, The Power of Intentional Communication in and Out of the Classroom, in April. Her research focuses on the ways in which relational partners jointly and communicatively navigate periods of stress and transition, and how supportive communication is related to coping and relational quality, and much more. She's been very busy, and she is with us here today on Baylor Connections. Jane Dameron, thanks for joining us, and congratulations on the Collins Award.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here, and the Collins Award, you found out this spring that you had received it. A pretty incredible honor. What was your reaction upon finding that out?
Yes, I was surprised and shocked to find out I had won. I knew I had been nominated, but I also knew the other seven nominees, and they were very impressive, well-known professors. And so I thought, there's no way. I was so honored to be nominated, but I thought, there's no way that I'll actually get this. So when I got the phone call, I was just totally taken aback, surprised. And it was funny because they were talking through all the logistical things about the award and what would be coming up. And I'm still thinking, like, how is this happening? I can't believe this. So just surprised, but really overjoyed. Excited and filled with so much gratitude. I mean, this kind of award is so special and so unique. And there's only 25 previous winners, if I'm remembering correctly. And so to be in that group is just a tremendous honor. I'm very humbled, but very happy about it. And very thankful to the senior class and to the Collins Foundation. So it's been a special ride this semester for sure.
You mentioned the logistics that they were discussing those with you. Obviously, it's an honor in and of itself, but what all comes along with that award?
Yeah, so there's a monetary prize. And then the other big thing you do with the Collins Award is you have to deliver a public lecture. And so in April, on April 25th, I delivered the lecture that you mentioned. And that was really fun because I kind of talked the audience through my teaching areas, my research interests, and just kind of how the idea of intentional communication is woven through that and how I apply that in my own life and in the classroom, and kind of how all these different areas relate to each other and relate to my teaching, because they so are, like, my research and my teaching interests are all correlated. So that was really fun. It was, you know, a lot of pressure. There was a big crowd there, but it was really special to have that kind of support and to be able to just share from my heart and kind of talk about what I love as a scholar and a teacher. So it was really neat. There's, like, different publications you're featured in, different interviews you do and things like that. But it's just been a really special season. So.
Visiting with Dr. Jane Dameron here on Baylor Connections, and we'll talk to you over the course of these 20 minutes or so that we have here about what intentional communication means. When I ask you about social media, you have a strong social media presence, and you run social media for Baylor Department of Communication. So if these are some topics that people are interested in, we are going to really delve into those. But I wanted to ask you, you know, where that interest in communication, where studying that as an area of focus began for you.
Yes. Well, my undergrad degree was in public relations, and I worked for several years in industry doing marketing and PR, and that was great. At that point, I decided to get a master's to really improve my career trajectory. I was planning to go right back into industry, but while I was in grad school, I fell in love with the topic of communication, specifically interpersonal communication, which is the study of how we relate to each other in close relationships, how we get into relationships, maintain them, even terminate them in and through communication. And that fascinated me. And there's a lot of literature to suggest that a happy and fulfilling, meaningful life is tied to our relationships, the quality and substance of our relationships. And as communication scholars, we see relationships as constituted in communication. You can't have them or maintain them without it. So I made this link between kind of communication, the way we relate to each other, and overall life, happiness, and satisfaction. And I thought, that seems important.
Yeah.
That seems really important. And if I can be involved in either in the classroom or at a research level contributing to that line of thinking and that line of exploration, That seems like something that would be a worthy pursuit in life. So it just kind of captured my imagination and my curiosity.
Well, probably almost anyone listening to this show, as you talked about communication in relationships, and I know you've done some studies on periods of transition in the past. And I thought that might be one fun area to focus on here a little bit, because your focus on supportive communication, that gives us the opportunity to dive into that a little bit.
Yeah.
Periods of transition are never far away from most of us. You know, they're coming down the line if they're not here right now. What are some of the ways that as you talk to your students and prepare them for that, or if they're in them right now, that they can use communication as a positive tool with the people they love or the people they're around to navigate those times?
Yes. Well, as you alluded to, transition and change is inevitable, but it's also complex, and we can't control a lot of the factors or the variables within a transition period. And so we rely on our relational partners, our family members, our romantic partners, our close friends to help us figure out those periods where everything seems up in the air or we're not sure what's next. And so in the research I've done, both in the past and kind of my current project, my most recent project looked at daughters and their communication with their mothers as the daughters were transitioning from college to career. That's a pretty stressful transition. You're looking for jobs, you're relocating, you're figuring things out in a professional context, you're creating new social networks. And so daughters were very stressed during the transition, and they relied on their mothers heavily for support. But mothers were only part of the time giving support that daughters really found helpful and really found bolstering during this time. So I think in thinking about support during transition, we've both been on both sides of the coin, right? Sometimes we're in the position to give support and we're like, what do I do? What do I say? I don't know what they need, especially if it's a more difficult transition, or maybe the person is mourning the loss of something or someone. We're often like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. And then on the other side of the coin, when we're needing support, sometimes we're in the position where the support that we're getting isn't actually helpful, or maybe it's even counterproductive or hurtful. So I think on both sides of that coin, the questions that are asked are, okay, what can we be doing better? How can we be tailoring support to our audience? And then how can we be intentional about asking for support when we need it? So I think when it comes to like, how do we do this? How do we navigate it? I think about a couple things. One is a concept called meta-communication, which is communication about communication. Mm-hmm. And if you're anticipating, if you have the luxury of anticipating a transition or a big change, I think sometimes talking with your relational partner about, how do we talk through this time? How do we, if conflict arises during this transition, how do we want to navigate that? So kind of doing some pre-preparation and setting in some strategies or some groundwork to say, hey, we know it's going to be tough. We're not always going to communicate with each other well. But when that does happen, when the rocky place comes during this big change, how are we going to recover from it? So I think that kind of strategy or meta communication is important. And then on the flip side, if you're giving support to someone else who's going through a transition, I think a lot of it is tailoring your support to them, not what you think you would need in that situation, but trying to figure out what they want and need. And sometimes that is as simple as asking, how can I best support you during this time? And really listening to their answer and really kind of searching for how you can be the best friend or the best romantic partner or the best family member to them at that point. And sometimes they know what they need, and sometimes they'll just give you some hints or ideas. But I think on both sides of the coin, being intentional and purposeful and proactive, and then just really seeking what's the best for that person. If you're not in the transition, but you know someone who is, I think those are all meaningful elements of it.
Visiting with Dr. Jane Dameron, and what do you enjoy most about, you know, as you find that information and talk to people, you know, that information, you're not in a lab, you're talking to people. What do you enjoy most about that process of gleaning these insights?
Yes. Well, I am a qualitative researcher, which means I conduct interviews, focus groups. I sit down with people face to face and I ask them to tell me their stories, and I get, you know, hear their insights. And then I kind of compile all the different people I've talked to and look at the commonalities between them. So I just love hearing people's stories. We all love stories. We all love hearing people's take on life. And so I just love kind of what you're doing with your show, where you're exploring people's ideas and their heart behind things and their experiences. And so I love doing that exact same thing. And then piecing together, what are the commonalities, the threads between all these stories that can get at the heart of some piece of this human experience or this communicative experience. So yeah, I think it's just the human element. I want to hear what people think and what they feel and what they've experienced, and translate that into larger themes about relationships, communication, living, etc.
Is intentional communication one of those themes? And what exactly does that mean to you?
Yes. So I used that term quite a bit in my Collins lecture, and I joked that it's not a scientific or scholarly term. It's just a lay term that for me kind of provides a central theme between all I do professionally. So I teach interpersonal communication, I teach nonverbal communication, which is about body language, and I study support and supportive messaging. And through all of those topics, I feel like intentionality, being purposeful, being thoughtful in how you relate to others and how you invest in others and how you interact with others, whether it's at work, at home, in your friendships, etc. That thread that runs through all those topics is, I think, the idea of thoughtfulness and intentionality and purpose. And so I used that in my lecture to kind of explore some of my teaching areas, to explore a little bit about my scholarship, and just to think about, in our relationships, are we being our best selves? Are we being investors in others? Are we caring about the well-being and the flourishing of the people in our lives? And are we also being open and transparent with them about our own needs in relationships? And so I think just that, instead of just coasting through life, instead of just coasting through your work relationships or coasting through your friendships or your romantic relationship that you've been in for a while, instead of just existing in those spaces, being proactive and really participatory in a thoughtful and intentional way. I think that's kind of how I see it, and an important thread that runs through my work and also my personal life as well.
We are visiting with Dr. Jane Dameron from Baylor's Department of Communication, the 2019 Collins Outstanding Professor Award winner. And Dr. Dameron, you talk about effective communication in the classroom. Part of that was part of the title of your Collins lecture. Mm-hmm. What have you found that it takes to communicate about communication effectively to students? Because as you said, it's very, very qualitative, conversation-driven. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So in my courses that I teach, interpersonal communication and nonverbal communication, I've made it a priority over the years to make those classrooms and those experiences very discussion-oriented. And I like to experiment in the classroom and try new things, try different lecture styles, different activities, different policies and procedures. But what I've found is that relational focus, where I know my students' names and I get to hear about their lives over the course of the semester. You know, on Fridays we do highs and lows, which is just like a really brief check-in to see like what was a high point, what was a difficult part of their week. And that gives me kind of a finger on the pulse of how they're doing. And that also creates a sense of community in the classroom that, hey, there's 25 people in this room, but we matter to each other and we have important things to discuss this semester. So I think when we talk about communication and relationships, part of that is fostering relationships in the classroom and having a mini culture and a mini community in that room where it's a safe space to discuss ideas and important topics and unpack difficult elements of the communication process or relational processes. And so I think that the discussion format and also the relational nature of my classroom kind of helps to foster that in a way that's really productive and fun, but also meaningful. I keep in touch with my students after they leave because they feel a connection with me and I feel a connection with them. And that just supports the things that we're learning. We're talking about the science of communication, but we're also engaging in it, in being intentional and investing in each other and things like that. So it's kind of the both and, in that we're studying it, but we're also practicing it.
What have you found as you talk about discussions with students, getting them involved? You know, that we hear a lot about how the world we live in is changing, social media, and mm-hmm. how that impacts young people's attention spans. And, you know, we're dealing with students now who all grew up with the internet, mostly in their homes. Mm-hmm. So probably you and me can remember when our families
yes.
got it, but most of these students now have grown with it all the time. In fact, this year's freshmen were basically infants when 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
So if that kind of puts into perspective the world they've grown up in, what have you learned about breaking through the clutter, if there's any there, and about interacting with students who have grown up in that environment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that's an interesting question and an interesting thing to ponder, because there is an element of dependence on that cell phone and all the mm-hmm. apps and all the things that students are doing on it. And I'm guilty of that as well. Mm-hmm. But it's sometimes hard for them to put the phones away and to really be present. And so much of their daily life is on their phone, how they communicate with their friends, even their parents, how they send money to each other, how they get rides, like everything happens through their phones. And so I think there is this sense of strong connection between them and their device. And like I said, I like to experiment. And so one of the things I started doing several years ago was going tech-free in the classroom. And when I first tell them that on day one, you can just see the discomfort in their faces. They're like, I can't do this. Should I drop this class? I can't be separated from this device for 50 minutes three times a week. But I kind of frame it as, hey, we've all gone to lunch with someone who kept looking down at their phone. And we know that that experience just isn't the same as when the phone is completely out of sight and you're just looking at the person and engaging in active listening and really present and just connected in that conversation. And they can, you can see that they all have been there where they've had an interaction with someone who was distracted and just wasn't as meaningful. I also joke about, I say, have you ever done that thing where you go to dinner with your friends and you stack your phones in the middle of the table and whoever checks their phone first has to pay for dinner, and they all kind of laugh because they've either done that or heard of that. And I said, that's what we're doing this semester. We're metaphorically stacking our phones in the middle of the table so we can be really present with each other this semester. And I said, I tell them, I promise you it's going to be worth it. I know it's difficult at first, but I promise you in the end it'll be worth it. And at first they're kind of incredulous, but then as the semester goes on and they see what good intentional really invested immediate conversations we have with each other, and I think they start to become a believer in it too, even though at first they're like, I can't be away from my phone. But that's kind of been an experiment I've done the last few years, and ultimately they want to be authentically connected to other humans just as much as anyone. And even though they use their devices to do that, and I do too, it's a mediated type of connection, there's still something about that face-to-face authentic interaction that I think they still realize that they enjoy in the classroom. So it's interesting.
What have you learned about asking questions that get students involved, or ways to present a topic that get them involved that, you know, kind of help break through that clutter where maybe 50 minutes go by and they forget that they haven't looked at their cell phone?
Yeah, I think it's that idea of open-ended questions and personalizing it to them. We'll start with, hey, anybody have an example of this, that, and the other? And then we get into kind of higher-level thinking questions, like how do these two concepts relate to each other? Where can we apply this in new ways? So I think you kind of start with, where have you seen this happening? And then go into deeper elements of kind of questioning their assumptions and questioning things maybe that they've always held to but weren't fully grounded in reality or, you know, legitimate science. So it's interesting to kind of see how when you open up the floor and allow them to discuss with each other, to discuss with you, and you make it a safe place, they rise to the challenge and they have things to discuss. And there's something magical that happens when a class really leans in and kind of collectively decides we're going to really unpack things this semester. And it's just really special. And so I think that sometimes students want that, like, sage on the stage kind of thing where the professor just talks to them and tells them what they need to know. But in my courses, I've kind of seen that when I open up the floor and we're all collaborators in talking about these neat topics surrounding relationships and communication, they rise to the occasion and they enjoy that. And it's not me lording over them or imparting my ideas, but let's collaborate and discuss this together and learn together. I learn so much from them. I mean, they energize me. They teach me, even though technically I'm in the teacher role. And so I think opening the floor to questions and different types of questions is a conduit to that.
We are visiting with Dr. Jane Dameron from Baylor's Department of Communications. You know, as a communication professional, pretty much everything is material. I know your husband, Caleb, he works here at Baylor. How much is he a subject? How much, when you're communicating, like, do you have to fight trying to put that communication professional hat on sometimes? Or
Well, it's funny because just in my everyday relationships, obviously, I'm aware of the dynamics that are going on. Every time I meet a new person, and once they find out what I do or find out what I teach, a lot of times they'll be like, oh, no, are you analyzing my body language right now? And I just have to say, no, don't worry. I'm just a normal person. But obviously, when you study it all the time, it's on your mind. And so you tend to be more observant. So I tend to be observant of body language cues. And I tend to notice when people are mentioning things that seem to be more charged or to be more at the heart of kind of how they feel about something. So I think it elevates my observational powers, but ultimately I'm just me and I'm just existing and relating to others in a normal way. And so I think it's kind of fun, the back and forth between professional and personal, because sometimes I'll bring examples into the classroom from my own life. Maybe we're talking about the five stages of coming together and the five stages of coming apart in relationships. And maybe that week I met with a new friend over coffee. And so it's kind of fun to bring in my own relational dynamics to a certain degree as examples, but also see how that translates out of the classroom into my own life and hopefully makes me a better friend, a better partner. At least that's the hope. Fingers crossed.
Talking to Dr. Jane Dameron here on Baylor Connections, and we're heading into the final few minutes. So I know you keep a pretty robust social media presence. Mm-hmm. You run it for the Baylor Department of Communication. You keep one personal as well, mm-hmm. that I know a lot of people interact with here in the community. What if you can do it in a couple of minutes, what would you say you've learned about that? Are there misconceptions, or how can people utilize something like that effectively for the benefit of their own life?
Yeah, well, I think sometimes apps like Instagram or Facebook, they can get kind of a bad name, or they can be seen as something that breeds a negative form of comparison between ourselves and others. And I understand where people are coming from in talking about that. But I find apps like Instagram to be a really inspiring and educational space for me. I follow accounts that provide meaningful content that teach me things and that get me excited about life and the world. And I'm inspired by the cool things that people are doing and showing on Instagram. And one thing I kind of use my platforms for personally is just to promote my friends and to promote Waco. I'm so excited about the things that are going on in Waco, going on at Baylor. I know so many people who are doing interesting, exciting things. And so if I can use that platform to kind of highlight them and get people more involved with what's happening at Baylor or in Waco, I think that's really cool. Baylor University allowed me to do an Instagram takeover a couple of months ago, and that was so fun because I got to share just a day in the life of a professor. And so I think that it has great connective power for all of the negative things that get talked about, which are legitimate. And there's a lot of interesting research on some of the detrimental elements of social media. I think there's some really good things that can come too. And again, you can promote the things that you care about, your passion projects, or the things that your circle is doing. And same thing with BaylorCom social media. I think our main goal is, you know, to disseminate information, but also to create a sense of culture and community. We want our alumni, our parents, our students, majors and minors, to feel like they're a part of something and that they're happy to be a part of the Department of Communication, and we want to celebrate them. And so I think that having those two missions, information and community, really help drive what we do on those platforms as well. So overall, mm-hmm. I really enjoy it and find it to be helpful more than detrimental, but I guess it's probably all about perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a Baylor Department of Communication graduate myself, I enjoy seeing what you do on there. Where can people find what you do online, social media-wise?
Yes. So kind of our main platform for BaylorCom is Baylor_com on Instagram, Facebook as well, and then Twitter. Personally, I'm Jane_Dameron on those platforms. So yeah, I love interacting with people. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of fun to use those platforms in a way that ultimately benefits the community, mm-hmm. whether it's Baylor or Waco or whatever it might be.
Well, Dr. Dameron, I wish we had more time. We've covered a lot of ground, but hopefully people check those out and you get to interact with some new people through that. Thank you so much for joining us today on the program.
Thank you for having me, Derek.
Dr. Jane Dameron, Senior Lecturer in Baylor's Department of Communication, our 2019 Baylor Collins Outstanding Professor Award winner, our guest today on Baylor Connections. I'm Derek Smith. A reminder, you can hear this and other programs online, baylor.edu/connections.